Every Woman is a womanish show about women making a difference in the men by their side. As 50% of the world's population and 52% of eligible U.S. voters, women are not a special interest group, and every woman should work and vote toward nothing less than 50-50 participation in social, political, economic, and environmental arenas. The opinions and views expressed on Every Woman are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of the KKFI board, staff, volunteers, or sponsors of KKFI and the Midcoast Radio Project, Incorporated. And good afternoon. I am Amy Bell, and I'm here with Sharon Lockhart. And our guest today is Dr. Julie Connor.
And Dr. Julie Connor has written a book, and the title of that book, I want to call it here, yes, Dreams to Action, Trailblazer's Guide. And it's designed to help people find out and follow their dreams, find out what their dream is and follow it.
That's exactly what it's about.
Good.
Pursuing your passion.
And how does one pursue their passion? First, you have to figure out what is your passion.
And that, I think, is the hardest thing for most people, is figuring out what their passion is. I had a really interesting conversation with a student that not only changed my career, it changed my life. And when I was doing a goal-setting workshop at ACE Academy, I asked a group of students, we were involved in goal-setting activities, and I was with one group and heard a student behind me ask me a question. And what I meant to ask was, tell me more about your goal. What came out of my mouth was, tell me more about your dream. And the other student stopped talking, and they all turned to him to listen. And he said, my dream? No one's ever asked me that question before. And I have 35 years of experience working with groups and schools and organizations. And for so many years, I showed them how to use certain tools to pursue a goal or to devise a plan. And most often, these goals were about somebody else's plan, about how to graduate from high school, about how to shape your resume in a way that you could be applicable and marketable, or about transforming yourself so that you could get someone else's acceptance. I hadn't shown the children how to take these tools, these instruments that help people pursue a goal and turn it inward to where they could take a look and examine their own passion. And that's something that I want to spend the rest of my life helping other people to do, to get in touch back with what sets their hearts on fire.
So why do you think it's so hard for people to know what they like? That seems like something that should be inherent in all of us, our dreams, our desires, our wants, and yet so many of us don't know what those are.
I think when we're small children, we're conditioned to be imaginative. And as we invite them to take part of different activities, we automatically start telling them about the right way to do it. I remember when I was 5, I painted a picture of an elephant, and it had all kinds of explosive color coming out of this little elephant that was in a car. And I was so proud of it. And I was told about the importance of coloring in between the lines, that elephants are gray, they're not rainbow, and that elephants don't drive cars. And so we're faced as young children into very tight parameters of what we should like and what it should look like. And we get so twisted into trying to form ourselves in ways that we can gain the acceptance of other people that we start to lose sight of the things that excite us. And we trade in acceptance for, as we look for acceptance, we trade it and swap it in for the things that we're really passionate about, which is a tragedy, I think.
Sort of like our creativeness is stifled and we're shut down. I can just kind of see that. I can sort of feel that as a small child. I'm feeling hurt by your story that I was told that my elephant was the wrong color and didn't drive a car, and I feel hurt by that.
Well, the thing is I still have that elephant, and it's in a frame, and it's by my bedstand because it reminds me to think outside the box, that not all elephants are gray, that elephants can be all kinds of colors, that people are all kinds of colors, that our desires are all kinds of colors, and that we have opportunities every day to pursue our passion.
I'm going to take this to the other end of that spectrum right now. When I was a kid, when you're telling the story about the rainbow elephant, when I was a kid, I would enter into these coloring contests. And I would be so careful and color inside of every single line and make sure the colors were just right and that the eyes looked right and that the, you know, if it's an elephant, it's a tail, or make sure the sun was in the right color and all of that. And I'd enter these coloring contests so proud that I had done the right job, the best job that I could do. I never won a single coloring contest, and they would always post the winners up there, and they were always the people who had apparently not seen the lines at all and had obviously done it all wrong.
Maybe it was the teacher's pet.
And it makes me wonder, I think that there's been some change in parenting to where now there's even more freedom with children. Is there a point where we cross a line where a dream can be given too much freedom?
I don't think so. Because what I think, I taught for 30 years working with young people and adults, and now I'm an student teaching field supervisor with the University of Missouri, Kansas City, where I got my doctorate. And as I go into different schools, there is lots of opportunities, lots of tools, lots of technology, lots of opportunities to paint and crochet and to explore different avenues. But I believe the boundaries with which we stifle young people are getting even tighter. I don't think we're inviting them into greater creativity. I think we're telling them that, but I think they're getting a huge double message.
I think that's an excellent point that you just made. Because you can color out aside the lines all you want, but if you're a girl, you're supposed to do that in pink and purple right now.
Oh, absolutely. At least in your seasonal color. If you're a winter, it better be red, white, navy, or black.
And if you're a boy, you better not draw a pretty butterfly or something like that.
Oh, absolutely not. It better not hold a purse. It better fit into sight. And then we start getting into societal roles.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And that's frightening, I think. Especially the more liberated we call ourselves, I believe it's really important that we examine not only our likes, but what's triggering those likes, what's expanding those likes, and it's so important to find people that share similar passions because they're the ones that give us permission to be ourselves.
So what age range of kids are you generally working with? In this conference that you were doing with the dream,
I work. May I back up
first
and tell you a bit? I started in 1980. I went into education because I knew I wanted to inspire people. I knew when I was very young, I had a voice. And I wasn't sure how I was going to do it. Education seemed to be the path to pursue. And I wanted to pursue music. And I wanted to pursue performance arts, but I pursued science because that was logical. And I taught in a rural school, grades 3 and 4, my first year teaching. I've been junior high. I've taught with high school kids. I've been a program director. And the thing that really changed my life and how I do things was right as I was finishing my doctoral degree in educational leadership, I found out that the district was downsizing and my position was eliminated. And there was a second there, I knew when the envelope was coming to me that it was like fire in my hands, and this was the opportunity to do what I really wanted to do. And the problem was, I didn't know what I really wanted to do. And I remember going out to tea with a friend of mine, and he asked me, what do you really like to do? And I had become so conditioned. By that point, I was showing teachers how to analyze data in ways that they could drive instruction. And I he asked me questions about, well, what makes me feel excited? And I didn't know. And for another year, I applied for positions where I would analyze data. And one night, I remember coming into my living room and picking up a magazine. And I felt so dead and so hollow inside. And I started to tear out pictures and words that inspired me. And I took my collection of words and pictures. I didn't realize I was creating a vision board at the time. And I started to group these in ways that I started to become in touch. I really believe that a left brain logic gives us a way of organizing information, of breaking down a dream and pursuing it in a way that allows us to start working on some things right now. But I believe it's so important to stay in touch with that right brain creative process that allows us to explore. And I believe that the arts lead us to our passion and lead us in ways to express it. And so now, as I work with groups, I work with young people as young as preschool. I have a special passion in my heart for junior high kids. But I also work with adults because adults with many organizations are so driven about meeting someone else's goal that they've become lost about how to do that themselves. And I think it's important to have opportunities to organize with your left brain, but also opportunities with your right brain to write and to explore different options that are available to us.
What are some of the ways that children and adults will express this programming that they've been given all their lives, the way that they would say that they're following someone else's goals? Do they think it's their own goal?
The adults oftentimes express themselves in terms of goals and passion and pursuing a dream. Oftentimes the first reaction is confusion. And they'll ask, just tell me how to do it. How should I do this? And they'll ask for examples of a dream or a goal they could have. And they're looking for the process. And what I hear in that answer is, I've been conditioned for so long to look for the right answer. Just tell me the right answer so we can go on our way. And we're also in a time, I think, in our society where we do things fast. And I want, and the process of getting in touch with one's goals and one's passions, of outlining what may be a dream that excites me, is not something that happens immediately. I think the longer you've been separated from your goal, the longer it takes to start defining it and to get in touch with what really excites you.
What have people come to discover? What kind of dreams have you found in people that they didn't remember that they had, maybe? Or is there some...
Yes, and there's a segue to my book, Dreams to Action Trailblazer's Guide. The book I wrote came as a result of the process I needed. In the early 1990s, I was so fortunate to be working with an organization that trained the members of our organization in missioning, visioning, and goal-setting strategies. And I knew I wanted to do that. I knew that process of dialogue and collaboration and consensus was so important. And as soon as I was able to name it for myself, I spent the next 25 years talking myself out of it because I don't have the time or the money or the resources to pursue that passion. So I stayed in slots that were very safe and organized information. When my position was no longer available to me, one of the things I was in my early 50s, and I began to think, how do I go about doing this? I knew how to break a process apart for missioning and visioning and goal setting strategies for groups, but I didn't know how to do it for myself. And what began over the next several years was a process of taking a look at the things that I was passionate about, breaking those into lifetime goals or bucket list goals, breaking those down into into yearly goals, breaking that into monthly, into weekly, and what does that look like in a daily schedule? Because I really believe that dreams don't just happen. They happen because we've taken some kind of proactive step. And that's the thing that separates, I think, the people whose dreams come true and those that don't, is the ones that, the dreamers are the ones who recognize that there are struggles, that there are challenges, and they do it anyway. And they take one step forward. I believe with all my heart that when we get tied up in all the how am I going to make it work is when we prevent ourselves from following our own dreams. It's my belief that if we get crystal clear about what our dream is and why we believe it, what we want to do, and why we want to do it, the hows have a way of taking care of themselves.
Yeah, I was going to ask, well, how do you do that? Do you have a process?
I do. And the reason I outlined it in the workbook was because I went when I was in this place of trying to discover my own dream, I went to hear lots of different speakers, and there are so many gifted, talented speakers out there. And so when I heard them speak about their own success, I was excited. But I would often buy their books. But what I found in their books was an autobiography of how they became successful without the tools that I could apply to my own life that I could become successful. One of the very first exercises that I recognize that I set up in my book is I invite people to consider what would they like to be. What would they like to do, and what would they like to experience? I invite them to explore what makes them feel excited, what makes them feel really angry, and then how can they use that their skills, their knowledge, their gifts, those things that make them feel angry or make them feel excited, how can they take that passion, either way, and apply it to what they want to be, do, and experience. And it is a process, just like you said, it is a process.
Well, if anybody wants to call in with some of their dreams and passions to have a proactive experience with dreams on the radio, our call-in number is 816-931-5534. And I'll start this. I think I am pretty passionate about the radio. I think that this is something that I could call myself passionate about. I don't know. I don't get angry about it, though. I will say that.
You get excited.
I do get excited.
And what excites you about it?
All these buttons. There's a lot of buttons on here. I know you can't all see this because it's radio, but there are a lot of buttons that I'm sitting in front of right now, and it's exciting. I'm also the person that had to color in the lines with the elephant, though. So, you know, sometimes I think that meticulous nature has its own passion as well.
Well, those meticulous, sometimes those little quirks inside of us are the parts that make our own story unique. There are a lot of speakers like me, but only I bring my unique story. There are a lot of people that want to be in radio, but only bring your particular passion, Amy. You've got gifts that no one else has, and that's what's going to make what you do really special and spectacular.
Well, I guess I do get excited about talking about women's issues, but when you just, like, the gut reaction is this whole place is so shiny. There's all these shiny things to manipulate, kind of, while you're over here.
Oh, sure. And so you're the one that brought up the radio. Where do you see yourself in 3 years? Do you see yourself here? Do you see yourself doing something different? Do you see yourself adding something different?
Oh, yeah. I hope that we're still doing this in 3 years. For me, Sharon's been at it for a lot longer on this show, and I'm having so much fun here, I couldn't put an end date on that at all. Whether there's an upward mobility in radio, I'm not terribly certain, not without going somewhere where you're not making quite as much of a difference as you are here. And that is something that I'm passionate about. We are here speaking about real issues that are affecting real women across both Kansas and Missouri and nationally. And we're reporting real happenings, not the spin that's happening here and there. We're, you know, having call-ins on the street from protests that are actually happening. These are real things that are really happening. And if you go somewhere else, you're not going to get that. So I like my volunteer spot where I'm actually making a real difference in what's being talked about, reported.
Yeah, we're not scripted here, and we get to invite our own guests and make our own decisions, and every programmer here has that freedom to do that. And most of the programmers here, well, all of them actually, are very passionate about their shows, absolutely. So I would say a lot of people here do have that, they have satisfied that dream. And I was thinking, when I came down here as a volunteer in 95, I had no thoughts about being on the radio. I just came down to volunteer. At that point in time, I knew some people who were involved in the women's programming here. Barbara Crist was a founding member of KKFI, actually. And so I decided I would help out. Joan Flaherty. I just kind of got left holding the show because they went on and did other things, and here I am. And thankfully, I have Amy, and I've had some good people in the past to help out on the show. And I'm excited to hear she has a long-range plan for this. That's exciting to me.
Well, something that I thought was exciting before we even started speaking today was you shared your rich history about what you've been with the development of this particular show. And then Amy brings in a whole new awareness with technology and the technological tools about how to spread this message to more women. I believe something with time, that how the times have changed. We talk about equality and how more opportunities are available for women, but in many ways, the opposite is true. And so shows like this provide us with opportunities to invite women and everyone to explore what really sets them on fire.
Well, we had a caller and I lost them. So if they want to call back, I apologize. But
that's all those buttons, and it is. It's tedious to learn to do that, but it's very exciting. I kind of equate it to when I operated a restaurant for 12 and a half years, a delicatessen, and you'd get all jazzed up, and adrenaline would be flowing during the lunch rush, and then you'd have to come down. And that's what it was like for me to sit in front of the board, was the adrenaline rush. Can you relate to that?
Oh, yeah.
Kind of like the runner's high or something that you hit, but it is exciting
We did a show a few weeks ago. We actually were filling in for the show after this, and we had a woman in that came in and said, yeah, I'm going to make this real easy for you. And she had a pile of like six CDs, and it was this juggling act of this and there and switching this and doing this and something from the preloaded thing and something from the CDs, and she was like, yeah, this is easy. I'm like, okay.
But I think what you just said is a really good example of pursuing passion, because when somebody came in with all of these CDs, you didn't just give up and surrender and let somebody else take
over. Oh, well, that's not an option, see.
You jumped right in. It could have been an option.
Oh,
it could have been, but you chose not to. That wasn't an option.
It would have been an option if I didn't want to be asked to come back to do this anymore.
And so priorities become part of the picture.
Well, I guess that brings back to one of the questions that I had earlier about how you can't just draw your elephant however you want your elephant to be all the time. There are rules that you have to play by.
Oh, absolutely. And that's an important point. Because if I'm going to construct an elephant, I need to construct it in a way that people also can recognize it and know what it is.
And you don't want them to think it's a duck.
No, unless we're going to a duck party.
Right.
But there are processes, and and I think that's one thing that is important about the work we do is. One of the experiences that was so important to me in my life was when I worked in an urban school district. And I was so, I didn't even know it at the time. I was so used to, even though I was a program director, even though I was a teacher and a workshop presenter, I was very afraid of what people thought of me. And so I would hesitate in what I said and how I said it. And when I was working in the urban schools, as much as there was chaos and different things beyond my control, what I did learn is that the one thing I do have control over is my words, my thoughts, my actions, my behaviors. And I think a lot of times people get caught up in this whole elephant drawing process when we get over-concerned about things that happen outside of us and we give our own personal power away.
That's a very good point. And it's a hard lesson to learn. What we actually have control over is really not very much except our thoughts and our feelings. And boy, that is a lesson some people never learn.
Right.
That's one thing that I really... A good phrase that I definitely learned was, a lot of people will say, well, such and such made me angry.
No
one can make you be angry. That is your prerogative. You can be angry or you can not be angry. But that was relieving, because I think people could make me angry before in my mind. I believe that, you know, oh, they did this and it made me angry. They made me angry. And when it was said, no one can make you angry, it's like, well, if they're doing something that makes you angry, they can. But it's just not true.
Right. And I believe that when we step into you made me, I step into victim mentality. And my power is in recognizing what I can do. What are your options? And I think it's in those challenging positions when we take responsibility for our own actions that we step into our own power.
It was empowering to realize that when it finally sunk in, the concept that no one can make you angry, that was a moment of empowerment. That was a point where I realized... sometimes people want to make you angry. They want to force you to be angry. And when I don't get angry when they want to make me angry, well, sometimes that makes them angry. And it's kind of, I've got the power,
right,
to decide whether or not I'm going to be angry.
That was something when I worked in urban schools that I would challenge students with, when they were so mad and he made me and we did this. And... they've done longitudinal studies with anger and things that cause fights in schools. And one of the things that we've discovered is more than 97% of the fights that occur in school occur over a rumor or occur over something that never happened. And so it's when we realize, stand in our own power and take responsibility for our own actions and our own feelings, we really set ourselves free.
That is amazing about the rumor and how little of it is actually actual, and we let ourselves become angry over it. Amazing, huh? So when you're meeting with people and they want to know, okay, now I want to get in touch with my dream, and you give them a tool, you allow them to free themselves up and just maybe imagine, or do you recommend looking at the pictures, like the mapping, or that you were talking about, the visual board, or how do they? How long does it take someone to realize what their dream is?
I think one of the first things that I do that I find so meaningful is invite a discussion over coffee. If I'm working with an individual, I invite an opportunity where we're seated over a meal or seated over coffee, and I begin just by asking questions. And I believe often when we go back to childhood experiences, is sometimes it takes going all the way back to be able to tap into what it is that makes us feel powerful. If I'm dealing with large groups, one of the things I do with groups in terms of dreaming and envisioning and missioning is the importance of establishing some norms first, because even if we are, for example, a group, the three of us really like one another and we have something that we want to pursue, if we don't set some guidelines and some procedures that are common in place, for example, everybody's idea is heard, everybody has a chance to express themselves, there are some big advantages of pursuing one's dream by themselves. There's some big advantages about pursuing one's dreams as a part of a collective group. When I pursue a group dream, I have all these ideas to brainstorm with and all these ideas that are shared. The challenge is it doesn't take long for someone to believe they become so attached to their own dream that they want to dominate the rest of the group. It's exciting to be an entrepreneur as an individual and pursue my own passion. But when we're in the beginning stages, we have to figure out how to manipulate all the moving parts.
Well, even as an entrepreneur, if you're going to bring on an employee, have a manager, have designated jobs, there are set roles that have to be established. And that can be a roadblock, I think, in interpersonal relations when pursuing a goal, is not being clear about what I'm going to do and what you can do.
Right. And I think that being clear up front reduces so many of the conflict issues that follow. But also, when the issues are, when conflict arises, we have opportunities to look at those as failures that bog us down, or opportunities to build communication closeness. It's through moving through conflict that we find opportunities to find common ground, and that's hard. It's hard, but it's essential to group goal formation.
Well, on that note, we do need to take a quick station break here.
Restaurant, 4124 Pennsylvania in Westport, featuring a dance party and Battle of the Bands Sunday, April 6th, with the Late Night Callers and the Grand Marquis. The Phantoms of the Opry appear at Californos on April 11th. More information is available at californos.com.
Support for KKFI provided by the weekly All Souls Forum this Sunday, April 6th at 10 a.m. will feature Dr. Robert McChesney from the University of Illinois. He will speak about his recent book, The Solution to Dollarocracy is Democracy, How Money and the Media Election Complex is Destroying America. Discussion and book signing to follow at the Simpson House. All Souls UU Church is at 4501 Walnut, one block east of Main in Kansas City, Missouri. More info at allsoulskc.org.
And we are back
with Dr. Julie Connor, and her book is, tell us the name of your book.
It is Dreams to Action Trailblazer's Guide, a guide to transform your dream into reality.
And she was just telling us, and we ran out of time, I'm not sure how we can translate this, but she brought a copy of her book to give away to someone who will call in, and then we'll have to figure out how to get their address, or maybe, do you have a phone number you can give them so they can call you back? Do you have a public phone number that you don't mind people having?
They can email me. Can I get that?
That's great.
If they emailed me at julie@drjulieconnor.com, that's DrJulie, Connor, CONNOR, .com, drjulieconnor.com, I would be happy to take their information. It's a 66-page workbook, and it's also available in paperback in Amazon.com, and the ebook form was released last week.
Good. And the phone number that you can call to share with us some of your dreams, not goals. I guess goals would count if you're not quite ready to that stage.
Absolutely.
Call to talk. And it's 816-931-5534. And we've got a copy of the book
for the first caller.
And it's a nice big workbook with some Yeah.
Big print.
Lots of space for you to fill things out. And
lots of activities. It's a three-part process that I take people through. The Dream It process is an opportunity where I provide activities and writing essential information to identify and describe your dream with precise, razor-sharp clarity. In the planet stage, I invite individuals to create a course of action that streamlines your schedule and maximizes your time to engage in goal-related activities. I know when I started my own journey and becoming a private consultant, I had no idea where to begin. So I began by just making a list of the kinds of things that I would like to do before my life ended. And from then, I was able to draw more specific goals, and I provide different activities for that to happen. And finally, there's the do it process, and that's the part that's the most important. It's one thing to write down the goals. It's another thing to honor your commitment to yourself and to your dream by boldly taking action. And I not only have activities in the book that offer people an opportunity to explore their dream.
We do have a caller on the air. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Oh, I'm excited.
Caller, can you hear us?
Hi. My name's Jim.
And where are you calling from?
I was just listening as I was coming home from the office. I've worked over 20 years as a software developer for companies large and small, and over all those years, I've thought often about being my own boss, and I've kind of thought through different business models, some that probably wouldn't make me much money. Like, for instance, I wouldn't want to be creating a business in which I had to just do a bunch of one-off kind of jobs where I would do work and get paid exactly once for it. I've been trying to think of something that I could create that I would get paid for over and over and over and over again.
Do I hear you saying an ongoing, like a regular salary, get a salary every 2 weeks and you knew it was coming in regularly? Is that what I hear you saying?
Yeah, I mean, if I could create something that would sell to a lot of people rather than just go into some business and create something for them that's custom and that only they want, you know, that's getting paid once versus getting paid a bunch of times by a lot of customers who all want something that's, you know, adaptable to their needs. And I've worked in so many different areas of IT. I've thought about web work. I've thought about engineering number crunching applications, even some real specific things. And, you know, you've used the word goal and you've used the word dream. And I've often said that, or I picked it up somewhere, that the difference is a goal is a dream with a deadline.
Yes, absolutely. Jim, I'd like to invite you to think about something. Imagine yourself in 3 years. And if you were to talk, if you were to describe your dream job in present tense, not in I will be doing, but in I, and then describe how would you be describing your dream job if you were doing it, doing exactly what you wanted to do right now?
I am supporting multiple customers who have purchased renewable licenses to software I've written that provides engineering calculations for their particular industry.
Okay, you've provided some very good details. Now, you said providing software. What kind?
This would be a class library but I think that would have to also be facilitated with a user interface. I mean, nobody wants to write their own user interface, but I'm thinking about software in a particular industrial field, like underground storage tank, leak detection, inventory reconciliation, pipe.
That was
gas
underground storage tank detection.
Stuff. I mean,
very specific. I don't think a lot of people would come up with that terminology or even know that there's underground storage tank leak detection. So,
something that I think was exciting, Jim, is when you first started talking, it was in very, very vague terms about how you wanted to pursue something that might generate income. And then the more you talked, the more specific you became. And I think that's a really important part of this whole process, is getting the way we start to figure out how we're going to do it and figure out all the moving parts is by getting really crystal clear about what this would look like. Don't worry about in this stage how you're going to do it. Be crystal clear about what you want to do. And you are already naming some of the parts that need to accompany this, the interface, the underground, and I think it's very exciting, and it sounds like this is something you're excited about, is it?
It would be very much life-changing, and it would be exciting to free myself from the employment bind, you know, which, I mean, I love to be employed versus the alternative, but I also would rather have a little more of my own creative freedom and input.
He said both life-changing and freeing, so that sounds like a lot of positives in a pretty short description.
Yes, I agree.
So let's get you in touch to get a copy of this workbook.
I think that's a fabulous idea. Would you like one, Jim?
That really is the reason I called, because I was listening to you and I was thinking about my ideas that I've just let kind of simmer for a long time, and I thought, well, you know, maybe I would be, if I were to sit down and write a book about the same thing, what would I try to say? But I don't have the experience of having taken the steps that you've taken.
Well, and don't worry about the experience. Worry about getting crystal clear, and don't even worry about it. Celebrate it. Enjoy it. About getting very clear about what it is you want to do and what some of those parts look like. And something else I invite you to consider is, let's say, I often talk to people and they say, well, I don't have the money, or I don't have the time, or I've got family commitments. I invite you to consider this. If you had all the money, all the resources, all the things you needed to accomplish what you wanted to accomplish, if you had all of those things available, then what would you do?
I would move on it.
There.
The most imposing condition would be the fact that you have to be accredited to enter that industry, and an accredited is about a $10,000 proposition.
And we can spend lots of time talking ourselves out of it.
But other than that, it really just takes a laptop and time.
I believe we live in an abundant universe. And oftentimes, a tragedy, I believe, is we look at the table and look at the competitors or look at the things that are standing in our way, and we see scarcity. And what I'm inviting is a change of perspective. What if we came to the table and there was lots of room for everyone and there was enough available for all? You come to the table with unique gifts and talents that no one else can do, and no one else can do it in the way that you do it. And the thing that most excited me when I asked the question about what would you do if you weren't afraid, what would you do if you had all the things that you had in place? The first thing you said was, and it didn't take long, was I'd move on it. And moving on it doesn't necessarily have to be quit your job today. Moving on it can be making a list of the things that are parts of all of the passion that you just discussed. And what are the subparts of that? And as you get very clear about what those parts are, then you can start considering a plan of action, which is what I unveil in my book, about what that would look like if you break it down into things that you could do today and the time that you have available at this time.
Would you be willing to give us a call back after we disconnect so that I can get your information?
Or we could, are you in a space where you can write down her email address and email her, Jim?
Oh, if you give me the email address right now, I can remember it very clearly. I'm pretty good with stuff like that.
Okay. Well, how about this? How about if you go to my website, www.drjulieconner.com, and there's a contact form. If you go to contact me, there's contact information there, and you can contact me directly.
Dr. Julie Donner,
Connor.
DrJulieConner.com.
Right, DrJulieConnor.com.
Okay, that's very easy, and I will not forget that.
Well, thank you so much for your call and sharing your dreams,
Jim,
and the process
you.
You've been going for. That was an excellent conversation, and we are going to continue on. We're getting ready to talk about some...
I would like to share what I would like to see in a software program. I was just thinking about this the other day. I would like to see an inexpensive replacement for Microsoft Office. And maybe there is shareware out there. Maybe there's something out there. But I'm so annoyed with Microsoft. Do I see a phone call? I do see a caller. But I'm just so annoyed with Microsoft Office and how they just keep, well, they think they're improving it, but they're just trying to sell it to us more and more. And, of course, that's what he wants, is to resell it. And I wouldn't mind paying an ongoing fee to have access to it. I just hate having to pay so much for it. Does that make sense to anybody? I'd be, maybe I should Google and find out if there's a... Well, do you use Microsoft Word, Julie?
You know, I've got a funny story with how all of this unfolded. When I first decided I wanted to inspire people as a speaker and writer, I had no idea how to start. And so, once again, back in touch to my colorful elephant within me that's 5 years old, I thought, well, where do I start? I'll make a website. I didn't know how to make a website, and I spent 2 months just trying to figure out the technical language that I could ask questions. And the technology changes so fast, and just like you were talking about with Microsoft. And I believe as we stick our hands into it and figure out all of the pieces, we start answering our own questions. And that's the exciting part of the journey.
I was just going to add in there, there's a lot of Linux users out there that have a lot of shareware stuff that have things that are not Microsoft Office, and I have a computer that's running on that at home.
See, I just didn't ever ask the question before.
Yeah, you just didn't ask the question. Sometimes you just ask the question.
And that's it. We spend so often we spend time trying to figure out the answers to some of these questions, where we can just as long as we find somebody to bounce it off of, how quickly the answers come.
Well, and so often we don't ask questions because it makes us look stupid in our heads. We think that we are stupid when we don't ask a question.
And I would love to add something about this. I grew up at a time that I was conditioned to be quiet, be a good girl. Good girls ask questions once, don't call us, we'll call you. And that continues into how we apply for jobs and how, sometimes about how we even ask questions. And one of the things I experienced was once I could get over my fear of asking people questions, just like you were saying here, I started to find answers that I didn't expect. In my book, for example, the first two pages are filled with reviews, and some of the reviews come from people. Dr. Michelle Robin, who's an expert in nutrition, she's a chiropractor here in Kansas City, and all I did was ask her if she'd be interested in taking a look at my book. She was delighted. All I had to do is ask. Rebecca Raddus is a national reputation for social media, and I contacted her via Facebook, and she was delighted to provide any information. And I've learned that people like to be asked questions, and they like to share what expertise they have. And so this whole process, I encouraged others that if you have questions, ask, because people want to know. People love to share their expertise. I know I do. And so I'm so glad you asked your question about Microsoft.
And that reminds me of hearing people like helping other people. And when you talked about what made you angry, I, of course, immediately thought about so many of the social injustices.
Patriarchy,
yes. And
for one.
So much that is happening. And so perhaps by being in this space where we are at this radio station, we have the ability, perhaps I have fulfilled a dream and hadn't even realized it, in the fact that we have an opportunity to speak out against social injustices and the things that are happening to people on a daily basis.
Absolutely. I think that we should consider ourselves fortunate to have an opportunity like this to speak on our passions on a weekly basis when a lot of people don't have that opportunity. And no, we are not highly paid professional people that can retire comfortably and early. We have an outlet for passion.
And yeah, that's real? Eventually what yeah. changed my job was, and I've got two things I'd like to say quickly. The first thing being is that I could have stayed where I was at in the same job. And had I stayed for 15, 17 more years, I could have retired. And I couldn't just continue where I was at, being dead inside, not even knowing what my passion was. And I really believe there's a saying, what melts fire, the fire that melts better hardened steel. And I really believe when we take off and jump off into those opportunities, that where we go into the unknown, the things that are most scary become the tools that empower us. Both of you get to come here and share Every Woman and invite the discussion to continue, especially to young girls. I personally don't think that there's more opportunity. I think there's more opportunities available, but unfortunately, I think sometimes those that push down the aspirations of young girls are other women.
They don't know they're doing it half the time,
right.
too.
Or being helpful.
Yeah, and they just use everyday language that doesn't necessarily encourage girls. And to me, when I hear you talking about following your dreams and things like that, there's this underlying thing that you have a dream, your dream is valid, and if you are willing to work for it, your dream is achievable. And that's a message that, you know, little boys and girls need to hear, but specifically little girls who may feel that their opinions are not as valued.
If you open up many women's magazines, they're filled with pictures about what little girls should look like. And one of the things that I'm going to be offering here soon at Unity Church of Overland Park in Overland Park, Kansas, is a 3-week session on May 7th, May 14th, and May 21st about exploring courageous conversations about multicultural inclusion and diversity and talking about all of these issues. Because one thing I find when we talk about some of these issues, whether they be men, women, young girls, young boys, minority issues, cultural issues, socioeconomic issues, religious differences, LGBT issues, it's so easy to slap it with "we're all equal now" conversation and end it. One thing I find when
it's just not true.
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. And what I'm finding, and I unfortunately find a lot of resistance, not always, but sometimes when I am invited to facilitate some of these conversations in schools and in churches, where you would think there would be the most, we are all members of the body of Christ, and the issues of equality that we have to talk about. In just because the Brown versus the Board of Education issue in 1954, where desegregation was announced in schools, and it does not mean that students aren't equal.
Well, they've learned to not...
Or families, or children.
They've learned to not say, "we're discriminating against you." They've learned to say things like, "you're not a good fit. This might not be a culture that's going to work for you." They say that they would have to be a little bit off their game to say, "you're being fired, you're not getting hired because you're a woman." But they will say, "you're just not a good fit."
If we're not authentic, if we're not transparent, then we can't build genuine relationships. And without that, we don't have communication.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. And stay tuned for Urban Connections coming up next.
Thank you. It was a delight to be here.